Hey, After Buzzers. Kevin Undergaro, the executive producer of AfterBuzz, along with Maria Menounos.
Hi, everybody.
And Maria and I, as you know, have put so much time and money into the AfterBuzz TV product and really haven't seen a lot in return.
Nope, not yet.
But one of the ways you guys can actually help us is by tuning into our new reality show, Chasing Maria Menounos. It premieres Tuesday, March 18th, 10 o'clock, 9 p.m. Central, and features me and Maria basically bickering, fighting.
No.
No?
No, it's not just bickering and fighting. You get an inside look into my life, behind the scenes.
You'll also get a behind-the-scenes look at AfterBuzz and an inside look at how Maria does everything in her power to shut us down.
Honey,
because she's very cheap.
That is so rude. Why would you say that?
Because it's true.
Oh, my God.
Well, anyway, guys, please tune in to Chasing Maria Menounos on Oxygen, Tuesday, March 18th at 10 p.m. We really do appreciate it. All of your support will help AfterBuzz because Maria certainly won't.
So rude.
You're listening to the AfterBuzz TV Network, now the largest new media platform on the web and your number one source for after-show entertainment.
Very good,
The AfterBuzz Studios in Los Angeles, California. Presented by Maria Menounos and streaming live thanks to Akamai Technologies. This is AfterBuzz TV's Bates Motel After Show. We'll break down tonight's episode and get you all the latest news and gossip. And now, another post-game wrap-up show for your favorite TV show. It's AfterBuzz TV's Bates Motel After Show.
Maybe this time...
Oh, is that our girl Liza?
That is our girl, your girl Liza. My girl's Vera Farmiga.
Don't you steal Vera? Don't you do that? That's cheating.
Welcome to the Bates Motel AfterBuzz After Show. You're listening to the lovely Liza Minnelli, do the wonderful "Maybe This Time" as sung by Vera Farmiga in episode 2, "Shadow of a Doubt."
By the way, a cappella and magnificent.
Yes, I do. I should say that I'm Joe Braswell. Dua Casey is not here right now. Nando Velasquez, does he still do shows with us?
I don't know what happened to him. I remember him in a vague sort of way, though.
He's not here, but Joe Sanfilippo is. It's the two Joes.
It's the two Joes. Joe and Joe.
The Joe Show.
We got this.
We got it. Good to see you, man.
Good to see you.
I haven't seen you in 14 hours.
It's been a while. You look different.
Shower.
Did you get some sun? You look
yeah,
good.
Yeah, a little shower, a little change of clothes. Yeah, good to see you. So, Bates Motel, I love the show.
I just want to say
before you say what you're going to say, I'm gonna let you say what you're going to say by saying, I want to dedicate this right now, off the top of the show.
Do it.
I just want to give you this the floor to do your Vera Farmiga gush love fest because, I know it's coming. It's going to be peppered throughout the show and that's fine. But I want to
Want me to get it all out of the way?
I just want you to get off the top. The first 3 minutes of the show, do it. How do you feel about Vera Farmiga?
Let me tell you something about Vera Farmiga.
All right, let's get it done.
You don't realize, maybe if you're like new to the world, right? You drop in, you're like an alien, and you look up and there's a double rainbow. Maybe you think double rainbows are there every day. And so someone says to you, hey, you know what? We almost never see double rainbows. Maybe some stone dude goes, double rainbow, and the whole thing happens, right? So then you've been told, you have a frame of reference. Now someone has said to you, double rainbows are rare. I'm saying to you, Vera Farmiga's performance in this damn show is incredible, and it is rare.
Yes.
It's a goddamn double rainbow. That's all I'm saying.
Okay.
That's all I got.
It's good.
I hate you so much.
Vera Farmiga is good at acting.
She wins acting, I think.
She's very good at acting.
I don't understand why there's no Emmy, but that's, you know what? That's I'm not a doctor. I can't prescribe medication. The judge was very clear.
Yes.
But, I certainly hope that it happens this year because it's ridiculous.
Okay.
All right, good. That's all I got.
Here's that. That's why I'm certain that's not all you got. But
no.
I'm sure there'll be more. But let's get into this.
She sang a song a cappella.
Yeah.
And it was beautiful.
It was.
Sang.
It was.
All right.
As was she. So Bates Motel episode 2, Shadow of a Doubt.
Pretty sure that was her playing on the piano too. It looked real. I'm just saying.
All right.
Multi-talented.
Yes. So, good stuff in this episode. A lot of good Norman stuff. A lot of good Norma stuff, of course. A lot of interesting Romero stuff. You know, like just when you think you got everything in this town kind of like figured out, just when you think you have the lay of the land of the town somewhat figured out, the layers keep peeling back, man.
Oh, yeah.
The town is one big onion.
Oh, he was, yeah, what did he say about Gil, man? He's like, this isn't some
pissant trimmer.
That's it. This is Gil.
This is Gil Turner.
This is no joke.
Yeah. So let's jump into that. So we know how the last episode ended, which is, you know, with the horribly graphic end to Gil Turner.
Yeah,
that's... The back of Gil Turner's head splattered on the back of his wall, which was not a great way to go.
Yeah, I'm not sure that all the brain cells even got to react to the fact that this was not happening, and then they were all over the back wall.
This meaning his fellatio experiment.
The hummus interruptus, and then all of a sudden...
Hummus interruptus.
That's what I said.
Now, that's great. Is that Mediterranean, or... Does that come with olives?
I did, definitely. Or nice pita.
Yeah, nice pita.
A little bit of olive oil on top. It's beautiful.
Right, got it. So, continue. So Gil Turner is dead. We know that it was done by the lovely Bradley, and she's come to ask Norman for help. And Norman, you know, I got to ask you this. So Norman, you know, we cut to that scene where he's at, you know, she starts explaining herself and what she needs, and Norman says, look, slow down. Before I do anything further, I need to make sure that, you know, what you did, like you did, that you did the right thing. I forget how you phrase it. So I'll make sure that, you know, I need to make sure that, God, I forgot how you phrased it.
I'm not sure, but you're putting me in an impossible position here, right?
The exact quote disappeared on me. But anyway, he just said basically, I want to make sure you know what you're doing, right?
Yeah.
There. And then she says, I killed the guy who killed my father. Now his response was something along the lines of, okay,
yeah,
that makes sense. Now, do you think that that's? I mean, how do you? I was really just struck by, you know, his acceptance of that being the good enough reason for her for him to help her. I mean, it's not like he reacted to the fact that you killed someone. He's reacted to the fact that.
We got to remember, because Norman carries himself a lot like an older, like a somewhat older person.
I found it. I need to know what you're doing makes sense.
Okay,
that's what he asked.
So,
and then she says, "I killed my dad." He goes, "Oh, that makes sense." Like that's
Well, you know, I wonder sometimes we don't see him through the eyes of the 16-year-old kid that he is, but he's 16. I don't know about you, but you know, when girls ask you for favors in high school that you aren't hooking up with that you want to be hooking up with, my memory. Like, you know, okay, just let's make sure I'm not doing a favor because you hooked up with somebody I should be mad about. You know what I'm saying?
But what wouldn't make sense?
Well, that's what I'm saying. If like, it's like, help me out. I was out with Jim last night. My mom doesn't approve of Jim. Can I tell her I was with you? Kind of a thing is one level.
Deal breaker. No.
Like, no, dude, you hooked up with Jim. That's your problem.
Right.
But if it's, you know, I killed the guy who killed my dad. You know, that seems to me it's a different level.
That just struck me. I need to know what you're doing makes sense. Like, there's a lot of things that probably make sense. Killing someone and being on the run is not one of the things that makes sense for me, but it apparently did to Norman. That's all. So, like, that just struck me.
It landed right for Norman.
You're like, okay, that makes sense. Well, but she is in trouble. She is a damsel in distress, and he does feel a certain kind of way about her. So that's understandable. So he decides to help her, and then, you know, we see that starting. We also see, Norma at the beginning of the show getting examinated in the lady way.
Mm-hmm.
Right. And, she's doing her thing where every time she gets anywhere near anyone that even feels like a doctor, like the psychiatrist thing, she starts asking questions because she really wants to know, but she's not going to go actually seek out the help. But it's almost like, you kind of know stuff about the body. I mean, you're gynecologist-ish. Yeah.
You're head adjacent.
So, like, what do you think?
Your area of expertise is only 2.5 feet lower than this. What is... Yeah, and the gynecologist, she was pretty funny. You know, she's very pragmatic. It's not really my deal.
Yeah. So, but you're, you know, doctor, you know, same thing. But I love the way how, you know, in these moments, Norma has a very sort of childlike... You know, again, that teenage girl. There's that teenage girl side of Norma that comes out, which is like, on some days she's very cold and calculating. Some days she's super manipulative. Some days she's sexy and, you know, and seductive, as we saw her in season one. And sometimes she's like a 16-year-old girl, like, I don't know. And it's just like, there's so many subtleties as to Norma's crazy, if you will, Norma's personality that Vera sort of does so well.
And so I love that one. Could it be argued, just, you know, that Vera Farmiga is maybe just killing acting. She's just annihilating it.
She's doing pretty
good. I'm just saying. So, but the gynecologist is, I think that's a that was a pretty funny scene because the gynecologist just almost like rolling her eyes like, dude, come on, just what was your question? I can tell you who to go see.
Yeah.
If you're nuts, just tell me you're nuts.
We did have our Dua Casey created normal drinking game, the amount of times that the word normal is said. This episode, you would have drank once, I think once or twice, but she says it there. Is that normal? She's always worried about normal. I think that's a great observation by the great Dua Casey,
who is no longer here. Not here with us today, but she will be back.
That would be one, you know, one drink. So then we see, we see our boys driving around where they discover Gil Turner. They're going to go by Gil's house, and they discover that Gil is dead, which means a lot of bad things for a lot of bad people, as Sheriff Romero seems very, very angry about it and very concerned about it and wants to get the guy who did this, which brings up a lot of questions about Sheriff Romero and his motivations and kind of how he's running this town.
Oh, we said it last week. He's a gray guy. He's a gray character
right. In
a gray town. And he does, I think he does as much as he can without rocking the boat to the point where he won't be able to be where he's at.
Right.
I mean, you know, there's a very clear power structure, and he's not at the top of it, I don't think.
Yeah, I think that, you know, Alex Romero has obviously been in this town for a long time. He knows the politics of the town, knows everything else. It's, you know, to use the Joe Sanfilippo phrase, it looks like he's just trying to keep the crap in the horse, if you will, right? So, I mean, he's sort of like, look, I know what happens in this town. The town's the town. As long as people aren't killing anyone, as long as, you know, there's a certain amount of violence that happens with this. In other words, someone's going to get a beat down. Someone's going to catch a beat down every now and then. But as long as we don't do business by killing each other, especially like this, point blank to the face. So I can't allow that to happen in this town. Is it really Sheriff Romero in the case, like, just trying to keep everything okay in this town where he understands the gray area? Or is it really like, is he complicit in this whole sort of weed game? And is he like, you know, I mean, last year we thought he was some sort of super crime boss gangster, which doesn't appear to be.
Well, you know, I think if you're, you know, if you look at the mafia back in the day and well, anybody who runs drugs now, you know, it's bad for business. A war is not good for anybody.
Right.
The only person a war is good for is the person that moves up at the end of it. But everybody in the middle gets messed up.
Yeah.
All the soldiers, a lot of the soldiers get killed. Nobody can relax at their home.
Right.
Nobody's off limits at any time. A war is no good for anybody.
Right.
So I think that that Romero's job seems to be to keep the peace.
Sure.
And it's not just among the citizens. It's also among the two families that basically control the weed.
Right.
And so, I think that's his gig. And so when this went down, obviously everybody assumes the other family did it. And he sees the beginning of a war. And what do you say to Dylan's partner? He's like, you know what this means.
Yeah.
You know,
you're new, but
you
know
understand what this is.
This is, yeah, not some pissant trimmer.
Explain this to the kid.
Right.
You know, and that was, you know, it's so interesting to me when you see, you know, law enforcement just being like, yeah, I can't really control you guys. But you know how deep this is. So
law enforcement, air quotes, basically.
Yeah, really.
I really wonder because it just makes me really wonder about, you know, I'm totally fascinated by Sheriff Romero and sort of his, you know, his place in this town. I mean, it seems obvious, but, you know, the question I have is he on the take? Is he receiving money from people because of this is big business? So is he receiving money? We know he, you know.
Is a sheriff's department.
Well, last year he, you know, there's a thing with the money in the bag, but like, is he like, you know, both sides keeping him, you know, in power to keep the peace? I mean, he's the top dog. I mean, what is? I don't know. It's just weird.
I'm certain of it. And look at the town. You've got a sheriff's department of a tiny town that has brand new Tahoes,
right.
Lots of deputies, lots of money, no right. shortage of all that.
Right.
You've got a town full of people that don't really have much of an industry except antiquing,
right.
And they're all driving BMWs and Jaguars and Cadillacs. I mean, you know, it's pretty clear, you know, right. what's going on. And yeah, I'm sure it's Kickback City, absolutely. And they've got federal funding, I'm sure, and state funding for that road that's going in. So, you know, that all happens because money and power, that's not happening by accident.
I'm fascinated by the notion of the small town sheriff still, you know, growing up in Angeleno and in the great city of Los Angeles my entire life, dealing with the LAPD. Shout out to Jamie Jepson.
Fine organization.
The fine organization of the Los Angeles Police Department. I am fascinated by this notion of, you know, the small town, whether it's Banshee, which we love that show as well, or Bates Motel. I like the idea of this, a one town sort of being controlled by one like one sheriff in one sheriff's department a la the Old West. I think that that's an awesome, cool thing.
It's funny because when you grow up, like I, you and I both Los Angeles, when you grow up like that, I don't trust a small department because it seems to me like, well, there's the power is concentrated in such a few hands.
I saw Dukes of Hazzard.
Right? Yeah, I can go all bad.
Yes.
But I think there's probably a lot to be said for the idea of the police actually knowing your name and the local sheriff knowing who you are and what's going on. Because, I mean, you know, we didn't have that.
Right.
And it's a different dynamic.
So what did strike me about that with Sheriff Alex Romero, what did strike me about that exchange in the car is the anger of like I'm going to find out, you know, whoever did this is in trouble, is going to pay.
Well, I really got the sense that there's this careful framework, almost like a knitted, like I don't know if you're knitting like an Afghan or I don't even know if that's what you call it. Mm-hmm. But it's very carefully put together and it's very delicate. And when somebody comes in and jacks it all up, you know, that you're creating a big mess. And Romero's got to get this thing knit back together. Otherwise, there's going to be a lot of people killed.
Yeah.
And then there's going to be scrutiny. And then there's going to be maybe a federal investigation or a state investigation, probably in the reverse order. And, you know, he doesn't want that. He doesn't need that.
Right. So I don't know if this is by accident or by happenstance or whatever, but he does get to the bottom, or we do as a viewer get to the bottom of the mysterious man, which is not so mysterious, by the grave, mourning, we now know his daughter. There's that confrontation at the grave, and there was a very not-so-thinly-veiled threat to Alex Romero saying, basically, look, things are okay now, and things are, you know, we've gone this long without sort of one side being pissed at the other, but that's not necessarily how it has to be.
That's it. It's been 4 months. You better figure this out.
Yeah, that's very much like a war is coming.
Yep.
So, that was cool. That was
given you 4 months. I've been a gentleman. I haven't killed anybody.
Yeah.
And I've thought about it every day for 4 months. You better go find it now.
Yes.
And then Romero goes out and he finds somebody.
Yeah, this is great stuff. I mean, this is really sort of a great world we weave because, you know, in the center of this whole great story of Norman and Norma, you have, you know, Dylan and being mixed up with this crowd, who directly knows exactly who now he does, who's responsible for the death of Gil Turner, but he's also responsible for enforcing, you know, partially revenge on those who, you know, who took out Gil Turner. He also, you know, will want to try to keep the crap in the horse, if you will. And I don't have to do a visual of that.
Every time.
The crap goes right in the horse.
You're 6'5", aren't you?
Yes.
Yeah, that horse is huge. Like, whatever horse you're talking about, he's a monster. He's a 9-foot-tall beast.
All right, sorry. That's for those of you who are listening.
Those of you who can't see, Joe is partially raising the roof every time.
Yes.
And he's putting the crap right back in the horse.
Raise the roof like I did in 91.
It was good. It was good.
Anyway,
don't pretend like you did in 91.
Dylan's trying to do his thing, and you know, Romero's trying to keep a lid on this thing, but I get the overwhelming sense that this is over everyone's head, and it started, but the person at the center of it is in Norman Bates' basement, which I think is just interesting this whole time. But anyway, so speaking of which, we do get to see, we go back to Norman and Norma, who is just really trying to figure out something to really, you know, try to help. And, you know, I just root for Norma sometime. She's just trying to keep this thing together.
Yep.
She's just trying to keep the family together. Like, it's almost like she's crazy. She's trying to contain her own crazy and her own secrets. Her son's crazy. She's trying to contain her son's crazy and her son's secrets. And it's like all she can do to hold this thing together and not go crazy herself. And, you know, it's a really crazy, sympathetic character that Vera's created here because, you know, you know, she's killed folks. We know that.
Right.
She's not necessarily a good guy, but we, you know, I mean, they're almost talk about the anti-hero, right? We talk about a lot of anti-heroes in TV nowadays, and I don't know. I mean, was she qualified as an anti-hero?
I don't think so, because
she's so sympathetic to me.
I agree with you. I think the difference between an anti-hero and a sympathetic character in this post-secondary golden age of television?
No, not secondary. Just post-golden age.
Post-golden age. I think the difference seems to be volition, and I think that so many of her choices aren't really choices. Okay. She doesn't have options a lot of the time. Like she had, like when Norman killed her husband, she could either turn her son in, or we disappear.
Right.
Yeah, and we take the money and run. And I was leaving him anyway, and I hated him anyway, and Norman was really kind of protecting me, and Yes, that's what I'm going to do.
All right.
And it's not like she went out and killed the husband. She protected Norman. And the same thing when the guy came, I can't remember his name, that broke into the house in season one.
Yes.
I mean, she didn't have a choice. She had to kill him.
Yeah.
And dumping the body, that's the next choice after that. But, you know, what do? You're a small town. You just moved there. You've already killed somebody instantly. Do you trust the sheriff? Do you not trust the sheriff? Meanwhile, the other guy's got the slave thing going on and down. I mean, I don't think that she's had very many opportunities to make better choices. I think that she's kind of stuck a lot of the time.
There's a lot of ish going on in this small town.
Never stops, man.
Small town, big ish.
Small town, big ish. Bates yes. Motel.
It's not on NBC or
AMC. Annie.
Yeah, owned by NBC. So she comes back. She has a great idea. You know, let's do a musical.
Well, the library, where she sees that kid and the mom reading, and she gets that nostalgia.
Yeah.
And that's Norma, though. She feels something.
We need to do something together.
And when she feels something, she feels it so strongly that she has to act on it.
Yeah.
Like, no matter what. So she never feels something like the rest of us where we go, oh, gosh, I remember when my little girl was a little, all right, okay. You know, maybe I'll give her an extra hug and kiss when I get home. Not Norma.
Yeah.
No, we're going to go do a musical.
Well, she wants to recreate that.
That's it. We're going to go back.
I can solve this. There's the answer.
Yes.
We're going to go back and recreate that feeling and solve this whole damn thing. Yeah, that's how she rolls, which is fine. So she goes and confronts Norman. I got to say, you know, and Freddie Highmore is also very good at acting.
He's pretty okay, that kid.
He's pretty good at acting, too. But Norman Bates, probably the worst liar. Like, this guy is the worst liar ever. Like, Norm, what are you doing? Nothing, mother. I gotta go. Like, can you? This guy is like, what's in the basement? Basement? Do we have a basement? No. I mean, bye. Like, everything he said, like, in that moment of, you know, when Norm is asking him questions. And then when Dylan comes in, after he receives the phone call, obviously, and it's just so obvious that, you know, he's in love with Bradley, knows Bradley, loves Bradley. He's like, yeah, whoa, haven't seen her, click. Dylan's like, wait a minute. Like, he loves this chick. He's not, something's off. Let me go talk to him. Hey, man, what's going on? No, hey, nothing, what's going on with you? Maybe she's dead. I don't know. Good night. Like, that. really?
But,
really, Norman? Know,
I think there's a tendency because, like I said earlier, Norman carries himself so much older and he has such a maturity to him and such a quietness. There's a tendency to forget that he's 16. The character is young.
Yeah.
I
think he's older.
Is he 17?
I don't know. But okay, we'll call it.
He's 16 or 17.
Yeah. Okay.
He's still in high school. He's young.
Right.
And so, I mean, I don't know about you, but my father, if he looked at me for any length of time when I was trying to spin some BS when I was 16, 17,
right.
I would just start saying things.
Right.
What? No, why are you looking at me?
Well,
I'd fall apart. Like, I was terrible.
Okay, I get that. I'm not saying that, but the point is that, like, he's covering up some pretty substantial things here. Like, he's sitting on a murderer in his basement. And, like, he's got to know that his mother and his brother do not buy anything he's saying. Now, obviously, Norma appears to be willfully, blissfully ignorant because she doesn't want to know.
Blissful.
Like, Norman, is there no.
Anything else you want to tell me about you and Mrs.?
Yeah. Dylan's, like, full-blown, like, dude, really? What's going on? Just, I don't know, man. If you find out, maybe she's dead. Anyway, I just struck me. I'm like, Norman's a really bad liar. So you know, Dylan seems to not be very convinced, but goes away anyway. And then we see Norman going about his business of helping her get out of town. And then that very sweet exchange between Bradley and Norman, which I thought maybe they were going to kiss.
I thought so. I think he thought so too.
Yeah, and there's a move where he kind of lurched forward, like almost. And she didn't.
She didn't do nothing.
Well, she didn't move forward or backwards, but there was a moment there where it was like,
yeah, but you don't want that kiss to be like it's payment.
Right.
You know what I mean? You gotta. If she's not going to lean toward you, then it would have been like, I'll let you kiss me.
Right.
Thank you for getting me all the stuff I needed.
Yeah.
You know, that was a pretty good scene at the little shop mart too. That was pretty cool.
Yeah, with the hair dye. You mean?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Getting stuff for my mom. You know, it's cool.
Bad liar.
Oh, what is that? We're all gonna die? Isn't that what he's saying?
Die. Hair dye. I gotta go.
Like four kids staring at like blink, blink, blink.
But I will say that there's something very sweet about, you know, Norman again. Again, Norman is borderline. I mean, Norman is sympathetic too. I feel, you know, like he's a sweet, like he really, like what he's doing on face value for Bradley, you know, harboring a murderer. Is really noble and sweet. Like, he really just is very chivalrous, if you will.
Yes.
So he's and he's not asking for any kind of payment. He's not like, you know, I'll do it if we do it. You know, he's basically saying, I'll do it because it's, you know, it makes sense to me.
Yes.
You know, so, you know.
It is very young. It is very idealistic. And, yes. And, it's noble.
Good for you. So let's jump into this. We want to talk about our new crazy boss, the Kojak, my man with the hair. Who?
Yeah, and the GTO.
Yes, he's a piece of work. This guy.
He's gonna make a mess.
He's already made a mess.
Yeah, that's true.
And so he shows up on the scene, and it's kind of like, what's this guy doing?
Anybody but Zane, right? Isn't that the deal? Yeah. Remo's like, if we get so and so, we're cool. If we get such and such, we'll be fine.
Right.
Not it's Zane.
Yeah. And Zane, he looks like a Zane, right?
He does. He's got Zane written all over him.
Zane, he's driving a Zane car.
He's got it. He's got a Zane mobile.
Zane hair.
Oh, no question about it.
He's in a Zane mobile.
he is absolutely Zane.
Yeah, he's so Zane. So he, you know, pops the trunk, pulls the guy out. You knew he was going to shoot him. He does. And he tells him, wrap him up and drop him off at the doorstep.
Yeah. That won't be obvious.
Yeah.
Yeah.
This is escalated.
And you see Remo's just like, shh. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. Remo.
This is all going downhill. It's all going downhill.
Which was a little, you know, I felt like it was a little too much. You know, when your kids does that thing where you're doing something and they're like, oh, dad, oh. And you're like, hey. You know, that's, I feel like Remo was a little too expressive there on that stuff there.
Well, I mean, I think if you see the writing on the wall and you're a pawn and you know the first people to get the first pieces that get pinched on the chessboard are pawns.
But not in front of your boss who's holding a gun after you just shot someone.
Don't, yeah, but
like,
he wasn't
eye roll like, oh,
he Zane. Wasn't the boss. I mean, he was talking about Zane was pretty much Zane's elevated because his dad is the boss, right?
Right. But my point is that he's Remo's boss, you know.
Now.
Yeah.
Yeah. In the last 10 minutes kind of thing. What did he say? He got picked up for driving 95 on his way to Vegas.
Yeah.
Who drives 95 with a car full of weed? That's what I said.
Exactly.
Zane Mobile.
Zane. Anyway, so Zane, he's funny. He's trouble. I'm looking forward to a Zane Romero showdown, which will be very cool.
Oh, Zane is not walking away from this.
Which will be very cool.
No, Zane will wind up covered in lie, I think. He's the guy that's shoveling stuff on top of him next week.
Maybe it'll be a Zane Dillon showdown.
You think so?
Yeah, someone's going to. Dane's coming and headed for a showdown with somebody.
No question about that.
All right, so there's that. We know that there's. So they're really. The war is on. I mean, the first shots have been fired in a war that didn't exist because obviously neither side had anything to do with the death of Gil. Now there is real blood on our hands, at the hands of one of the families. So, you know, we can only imagine that this is just going to get worse. Also, sticking with the Sheriff Romero and what he's doing, he has a break in the case, in the murder case.
Yeah, he picks up that guy whose name I don't recall right now.
His name is, I will search it.
But he plucks that guy. The guy's he's basically shoveling weed down the toilet, mm-hmm. and then jumps out the window, running across the backyard. Romero pulls him down.
Right.
I don't think he had I don't think he killed. I don't get the vibe at all that he was nervous about having anything to do with what's her name's death. I think he was much more concerned about the weed. I don't think he.
No, I think the thing though, as he in that interrogation, he's very much like. He knows the legal system. He's beat the legal system a few times. He says, you know, even when he's describing, he's like, you know, one man says she's even troubled. Like he's using sort of the exact mm-hmm. defense that he would use in a courtroom. He's not worried about anything because he knows there's nothing on him that can pin him down. So he seems pretty calm about this whole situation. Plus, he's probably been here before. Like he's been like Romero alluded to the fact that like, look, I know you did this. I know you killed your girlfriend.
Right.
I know
four people OD'd on bad drugs. You sold them.
Exactly. I know that you're a bad guy. And he's like, yeah, but you know, you got nothing on me. And so he seemed not worried at all. So I think Romero. I love the fact that Romero had really had a decision to make there. When he's sitting in his office in a later scene, drinking his whiskey, it's like, do I take this guy down? Do I do what I have to do to take this guy down in order to solve this crime and button this thing up? Excuse me. Even if I know that I may not have sufficient evidence, do you think this means he's going to maybe, I don't know, maybe not tamper with evidence?
This guy left fluids. He didn't deny that he left the fluids.
It's not enough.
Well, here's the thing. Didn't deny they left the fluids. He was very, very slick, though. He's like, were mine the only ones you found?
Yeah, no, he knows.
He knew. He knew the score.
Right.
But I think that Romero's really got pressure from her dad, from Miss Watson's dad, to get to the bottom of this. And it sounds like, you know, it sounds like that scene in the cemetery is very much like, hey, I'm keeping this all on simmer for you. If I turn up the heat, this whole thing is going to pop off. So you better get to the bottom of this now, right, or I'm going to go ahead and get into it.
Right. I mean, yeah. I guess what I'm getting at is I'm wondering if Sheriff Romero will have to plant some evidence or doctor some evidence in order to put this guy away, because if he seems to think that he has to do something, but this guy has to go down. In order to restore some order.
Yeah, we have to get this tucked away.
I've got to get this, because otherwise...
Right, now that Gil's dead, we've got... Now we got two murders unsolved,
right,
of relatively prominent people. One of them very prominent, one of them... they're both prominent.
Right.
You know, we can't have this. This has got to get... We've got to get to the bottom of this now.
Yeah. So, I don't know. We'll see. We'll see how this plays out and develops, but it is... Something is going to happen, and this is how maybe we know how Sheriff Romero now keeps the peace. He sort of does what he has to do to make sure that everything stays in order.
Well, yeah, I would imagine that kind of becomes the deal, right? Because it's all gray anyway. You're dealing with known drug dealers, with all of the known drug enforcement that's going to come along with it. You have, I would imagine, what amounts to gentlemen's agreements.
Yep.
As far as to territory, as far as to what is adequate and what is over, as far as retaliation goes.
Right.
You know, when somebody gets drunk and screws up, what do we do about it?
Right.
I mean, all these things, you got to have kind of like an understanding without writing it down that we're going to run this all through Sheriff Romero's office.
Right.
So if he wasn't informed that something was going to happen, which obviously he wasn't, then somebody's breaking the rules. And so, you know, we have to reestablish order. And on top of that, you've got Miss Watson, whose father is obviously a heavy hitter in this whole deal.
Yep.
And she was dating at least one of the other heavy hitters, probably two of them.
Yep.
You really do need to quiet this whole thing down before it does explode.
Nick is the father. My internet is now working, so now I'm back to work. My computer is now working, so I have notes. I have everything. Nick.
Nick. Nick.
So we'll see how this works out. But so now I just want to switch back to Norma, basically, because Norma has, you know, we talk about the idea of the play. We see this great moment where Norman is really just trying to do his best to take care of his situation in the basement.
Well, we didn't talk about Sandman, which I thought was absolutely
lovely. Well, that's what I'm
getting
to right now.
All right.
Norman's trying to get to his thing in the basement, but at the same time, Norma wants to work out and try and see what they can do on the piano and work out some things. And so we get a lovely number, a lovely rendition of Mr. Sandman as sung by Norman Bates, which they used for the season 2 trailer, which was awesome.
Yeah, you put a little bit of reverb, a little bit of echo on that. It does instantly become haunting.
Yes, it was, but it was very awesome. And you know, Freddie Highmore was singing his little heart out.
His little English heart was singing it out. You know, I gotta tell you, I do love me some Vera Farmiga.
Really?
A little bit. And I thought that was such a great scene. You know, here's this mom just trying to recreate this feeling, and really, you know, she's given up so much for this kid, and you know, they're feeling that distance that she's terrified to allow.
Yes.
And so she's like, well, we can do this thing. We're going to sing this song. Remember how we used to sing? And like, Mom, no, I don't even know the words, blah, blah. And as soon as the song comes on, he does jump right into it, and he sings it, and halfway through, he starts having a great time.
Yes.
And she's got to have that feeling again for a minute. And in the meantime, camera pans over to Bradley, who's on the stairs, and she's tearing up a little bit, because here's, you know, mother-son thing going on that she's not going to experience again. Her father-daughter thing is over.
Yes.
I definitely get the impression she was much closer to dad than she is to drunky McPilly mom. So, I mean...
Drunky McPilly mom?
Doesn't she say he was a drunky McPilly?
Maybe.
So, I mean, you know, I thought that was very touching and moving. I enjoyed it very much.
It was very touching and moving. And again, it's more insight into the Norman-Norma, you know, dynamic and relationship, which I will bring up. I forget my guy on Twitter, but who, you know, commented on the fact that I'm always talking about them. I'm obsessed with this incest, the incest. You know, it's I say that it's an incestuous relationship. I'm not obsessed with the fact that are they going to do it or do they have sex or will they won't have sex or have they or whatever. I'm saying the fact of the matter is the Norma Bates relationship is very incestuous. The way that they, it just is what it is.
It is. Norma and Norman are not normal. That is how this works.
Right.
And if you guys, that's the whole crux of the show. I mean, the whole show would not exist if their relationship was not inherently odd.
Too much close talking, too much, you know, but behind your back, leaning over the shoulder. Cheek
oh,
to cheek.
Way too much touchy-touchy. And when she comes out, when they come out of the audition, they're not going to do the audition. He changes his mind. Let's go back in and do this. Where does she kiss him? She doesn't kiss him on the forehead, doesn't kiss him on the cheek. She kisses him on the lips.
Yes.
I've known my mother my whole life. Yes. I can count the times I've kissed my mother on the lips. It just doesn't happen.
Yes.
So, I mean, you know, I think and the whole show is predicated on the idea that Norma got paid off on her husband's life insurance because she protected her son, as opposed to saying what really happened.
Yes.
And this is kind of the whole show is based on this. So to pretend it's anything else is kind of, you know, closing your eyes to, I think, what the show is, a pillar of the show, so to speak.
Sure. And we'll get into a little more of that later. So we get to, let's talk about this audition. So we have that, you know, sort of scene, and we have this sort of tension building where, you know, Norman has somewhere to go. He promised Bradley he'll be there at 8. He's got to go to this audition, you know, like.
I gotta talk about this audition ever so briefly. I did community theater when I was 18 or 19. I was 18. Mm-hmm. It's a wonderful experience.
Yes. You're so dismissive. That's your big time Top Gun
actor.
No,
that's not what I'm saying. I'm saying
you're so dismissive theater, of community theater.
Community theater is a very
the little people.
It's a very specific thing. It's a very, very specific thing. It's people who enjoy it for its sake. They enjoy the theater for its own sake. I have never been a part of one that looked that professional. That was very serious.
Yes.
That was a serious theater. Mm-hmm. That was a serious crew. I mean, the pantsuit lady was pantsuiting it up.
She was.
She's from what was it, from Hung? She was from Hung, wasn't she? She was the she played the madam that you never
saw
Hung.
Remember.
HBO, good show.
Yes, I mean I've seen it, but I don't remember it. But yeah, great. Yeah, that was a great. I love the whole idea of the whole community theater. This large sort of large scale community theater in a small town.
Yeah, where it's like no joke,
giant. Like you walk in there and there's like 15 million people auditioning in the hallway.
Me.
I'm like, how big is this
town?
Well,
you know what? Can I just speak a little bit?
Ladies and gentlemen, Marissa Serafini, producer extraordinaire.
I've actually been a part of a community theater. I've been a part of that kind of society and whatnot. And some community theaters are really nice. They are well funded by the city. And even you have volunteers. You have people's names that donate money to make theaters grand like that. So I can understand if it was a really nice theater.
It was beautiful. You will enjoy it.
Thank you, Marissa
Serafini. I probably would.
Thank
you.
Ladies
and gentlemen, the magnificent Marissa Serafini.
Yes, and just tell Joe that everyone's not a big shot.
That's not what I was saying. That's not what I was saying at all. I was impressed with the scope of the community theater.
So the audition.
I try to put words in my mouth.
I always do. The audition happens, and you know, it looks a little intimidating. And Norma says something to the effect of, you know, well, I'm a little scared, but you know, I'm a little nervous, but you know, this will be good. I was just waiting for this to be a complete disaster.
I know, right?
It kind of almost was. I mean, they had their little fight and they had to storm off. But I was just waiting for. We've seen Norma in so many public situations where she gets in over her head. She doesn't really think the whole thing through. We see it at, you know, in public, whether it's the bank or whether it's with the doctor or the psychiatrist or last week at the city council meeting. She kind of just goes in, and then next thing you know, she's, you know, having a meltdown. I was so hoping that happened, but what we got was actually something better. But not before we have that wonderful exchange, that sort of the argument, the Norma argument that started in the community theater, in the audition, and then spilled out to the outside. That's the ultimate sort of Norma dynamic there. But more importantly, that was a full psychotic break, in my opinion, by Norman.
Let me say
he
this:
he snapped there,
16 or 17 years old, and you remember if you can remember what that felt like. Everything was life or death.
It's like 10 years ago.
Yeah, a couple minutes.
Yeah.
So everything was life or death. And for him, the whole payoff, the whole thing that's worth all the stuff he's going to deal with for Bradley is that ride, is that car ride,
right.
2 hours, the two of them alone.
It's a good point.
Out in the middle of nowhere. He is her knight in shining armor. He's probably going to hold her hand, he's thinking.
Maybe, yeah.
She's going to smell great. She's going to be so happy that it's me. I'm going to take care of her. I'm going to get her there. And when she gets on that bus, she's probably going to give me a hug. She's probably going to give me a kiss.
Yep.
She's going to tell me where she's going. And we're going to get together. You got it. All that fantasy's got to be there because it sure as hell would have been there for me.
Yeah.
And he has to sacrifice all that. He has to give up the payoff and give it to Dylan, who we all know she wants a piece of.
Yeah.
I mean, that's bold, man. That was a tough and very, I was impressed with that. That was a tough thing to do.
When he says, I'm leaving, and he has to make that decision, though, to leave, like he's arguing, says, I'm leaving. He made a decision to leave. He storms out. He has to leave. He's already in tears.
Yeah.
Because the breakdown comes as like, mother, you're making me do this. I do not want to leave you. I don't want to leave you, mother, but you're making me do this because I have to do this other thing. And now it's such an intense conflict for him that he bursts into tears. And then he flips around with tears in his eyes and starts going off. It goes until we're like Norman Bates mode, which is good. Freddie Highmore doing some great acting there.
And feeling all that pressure, too. I mean, they do such a great job. He does a great job with it.
Right.
You know, can you imagine? I mean, I grew up with three brothers and three, you know, two sisters, one brother.
Right.
My mother didn't have all her eggs in one basket by any stretch. So none of us felt that pressure. But he's got to feel all that. There is no husband. There is, I mean, Dylan's halfway there.
Right.
You know, but all the pressure for all of mom's reason to be and all of mom's love is on him.
Right.
And so it's not just like, hey, mom, I really want to do this. You'll be fine. It's all of her expectations and her hopes. And what she's going for is not just about her. It's about them together. He's got to feel all that.
Yeah, but you're also missing the most important part of that, too, is it's not about him feeling the pressure from her. It's about he wants to be there for her. Like, he is agonizing because he does not want to disappoint his mother. He's want to let her down. Like, it's a true conflict for him that maybe helps causes these breaks. But he, in my opinion, he sort of blacked out and was going into, like, basically very hateful speech, I hate you. You see this with them a lot. This is this dynamic you see with them where one of them kind of loses it tremendously and the other one is like, oh, I'm sorry. No, it's fine. It's fine. It's fine. The other one's like off losing. When Norma loses it, she goes. And Norman's like, mother, no, I'm sorry, mother. When Norman loses it, Norma's like, oh, honey, no, I'm sorry.
Yeah,
like,
you're right. You're 100% right.
Crazy,
it's a good take.
Yeah, it's a really interesting dynamic, the way they fight and the way they both have their sort of breaks. But when Norman blacks out, he's like, I mean, hide the knives, hide the things that bash him under the
knife. He don't know where he's at.
It's not a good scene. So that was going down, and that was a little scary. Norma was upset. But then what does Norma do? You know, she... you know, goes into her thing and she fully, you know, starts crying and starts, you know, I'm so scared. I'm so scared. And then, which just snaps Norman out of his thing.
Which is all the pressure that she's feeling because she feels that he probably killed, he probably killed her. And you know, forget about those pearls. She found those pearls.
Oh yeah. Well, we'll talk about that briefly too, but I just want to ask you this question about that. This is the thing about Norma Bates that I haven't quite figured out. Because she is a master manipulator when it comes to Norman, obviously. Like, there's a big, like, she knows how to manipulate him. But in a lot of ways, it doesn't feel like, Vera Farmiga doesn't necessarily play it as manipulation so much as she does play it as genuine, like, I'm genuinely upset. Like, that moment when she's, like, crying, like, I'm so scared, there wasn't, like, a take to the camera, like, I got him now. Like, she genuinely was scared. So, and the question to you is Norma doing a manipulation thing, or is she really, like, sort of crazy having these breaks, and it's just part of her personality that Norman has to deal with?
Well, I think so much of what she deals with is protecting Norman from himself. I mean, really, we've established that he does have the blackouts. We've established that he's killed one person and attempted to kill another.
Right.
And possibly killed one more.
Right.
We know he tried to kill Dylan, and we know he definitely killed Dad, and he went after maybe Miss Watson. We're not sure.
Maybe.
Right? And so Norma is terrified, I think, of and for him. So, I mean, it's not just a matter of this is what I want. It's combining that with I have to protect my son from society, and I have to protect society from my son. And in doing that, I will be protecting my son.
Right.
Does that make any sense?
Oh, yeah.
And so she's dealing with all that without going to anybody else. And so, she just really keeps the pot on simmer all the time. So at any point, it's ready to bubble over because there's so much happening underneath.
But there's always...
Without letting him know.
All without letting him know. But there's always, at the end of the day, when Norma wants to do something, when Norma wants something, or Norma is concerned about Norman going off with other girls or going off and leaving her, or there's whether it's a jealousy or whether it's like, you know, whatever, like Norma always finds a way to get Norman to come back or to get Norma, whether it's like, okay, Norman, gentlemen, if you don't like me, or it's like, I'm scared. It's always something that always seems so manipulative, and Norman clearly resents it, as he, right. as he let her know in the speech. But it's just interesting, because I didn't really feel like that she was on purpose manipulating him. It really felt like she was genuinely scared and trying to keep this thing together.
Well, you know, it seems to me it's a combination of what she wants, and that fear of and for him.
Right.
And I think it's the combination of the two that makes it so compelling, because it's not that she's not manipulating for its own sake. It's more than that. Right. And the other side of it, I think that is it can't be overstated, is that he doesn't know. He doesn't know that he killed his dad. He doesn't even remember going after Dylan.
Yeah, he doesn't know. Yeah, he doesn't.
So this is all from his point of view. He doesn't know about this stuff, and so he's like, "What the hell?"
Right.
You know, so for him, it's like this dysfunctional love with mom thing. But for her, it's a combination of the dysfunctional love and the practical side of protecting him from society and society from him.
And from himself.
Yeah.
And so then we have this moment where Norman makes the decision. He comforts her and then decides, I'm going to stay. And that's like, this is the whole Norman-Norma relationship in a nutshell, right? The only thing, as you very eloquently put, the only thing this kid wants to go do is spend that 2 hours in the car with Bradley and maybe get a little hand on the knee or something. And do something very noble.
Get to be a hero.
That's all this kid wants to do. Not to mention the stakes are sky high. She's a murderer in his basement. Like, she's counting on him. But yet, he cannot leave Norma. Norma's
can't
got
do
a
it.
Song to sing, damn it. Like, he cannot leave. She wants to do the audition. Like, the calculation is like, I've got the murderer girl I've got to save, and I love her, and I'm going to drive her, but my mom wants to audition. Ah, okay, Norma, let's go audition.
But there's more to it. I mean, he can't just steal the car and abandon mom, and then what?
I don't think that's part of his calculation. I mean, you're being way more pragmatic to me than I think that and more practical that I think Norman was in that moment. In that moment, it was about, I'm not going to leave my mother. Mother, I love you. It's like, This is the whole thing. Do I love Bradley or any other woman out there in the world, or do I love my mother?
So is it 1,000 Bradleys?
I love my mother.
1,000 Bradleys or Norma?
Or the next 100 girls?
That's
that come
what I'm
along.
Saying.
It's always going to be Norma.
It's always Norma.
And then he's always going to resent that, and that's what that's his thing.
Like, I think we solved it.
Yeah, I mean, we solved it.
I think it's done
too.
Good night.
So that's the thing. So he goes in and they do the audition, and he first makes the call to his brother, and then does that
noble.
Call.
Jumping on that grenade.
Yes, he jumps. And also, look, Dylan equally is noble because...
Dude, does he do the do.
He's got way more information than Norman can ever possibly even fathom of having. He knows what's happened. He saw a guy get shot over this. He knows who Gil Turner really is. He knows everything. He knows, like Norman's like, yeah, some guy, Gil Turner or whatever, I don't know, she killed him. You gotta help. And he's like, oh my God. You know, all right, I really gotta, like, let me... put it in this thing. He doesn't turn her in, which would probably make everyone's lives a whole lot easier,
right.
Save a lot of lives and make everything okay. He does what his brother should have, you know, was said he was going to do, partially for his brother, partially for him and her, you know, and he takes her to the bus and does the whole thing and comes up with a suicide note and then very nobly says, my brother.
This is killing my brother.
It's killing
that
my
he's
brother.
Not able to do this for you.
Yeah. Which is, you know, you gotta love Dylan. I love all these people.
Really? He's a terrific guy.
Yeah.
Big fan. And when he finds out his uncle is his dad, that's gonna really destroy him.
I love the Bates family.
Oh, it's good stuff, man.
It's just it's lovely.
We didn't talk about it enough, I don't think, because, you know, musical theater is a difficult thing. I think sometimes it works and sometimes it doesn't. But maybe this time. When she sang that.
Yeah, well, I was going back to that.
So, are we going back to that?
We're going back to that.
Let's go.
We've got to go back there. So I'm just saying that. So he makes the phone call is what I was saying. He makes the phone call, and then he returns to go back in with his mother to deliver with the moment I've been waiting for. Like, oh, here it comes. She's going to get up there, and she's going to do a Norma meltdown. This is going to be good. And she starts kind of slow, and I'm like, is she in key? And then like, oh, that's really nice. Oh, that's lovely. Oh, it's beautiful. And then by the end, it was fantastic.
Oh, she was annihilating it.
And forget about it. I'll let you talk, you know, as the theater.
I'm not a musical theater guy. Nerd. I just.
You're not a musical theater nerd? Where'd you go to school?
I went to UCLA.
For what did you major in?
I majored in theater, theater. I went to the School of Theater, Film, and Television.
It's something there. Anyway, so.
You know, we're the number 8 university in the world. Did you know that?
Yeah, I heard that.
I'm just saying.
Anyway,
UCLA?
Anyway, so I was waiting for this moment to happen, and it really turned around, but it was so poignant because obviously, I mean, written on the wall, this is Norma singing about her own life. You know, I mean, what a, you know, what a perfect song, you know, Liza Minnelli from Cabaret singing, you know, that song. What a perfect
Maybe
song
this
for
time.
Her. Oh, breaking my heart for Norma. I'm so sympathetic for Norma Bates. She kills the song as only she could. And what's so amazing about this, why she moved the pantsuit casting director in this, is the fact that, like, she's emoting so much and she's breaking everyone's heart in the room. What the pantsuit casting director doesn't know is, well, that's Norma Bates. She's nuts.
Yeah. And like, this song
she's having a nervous breakdown up there.
Could not have been better chosen.
Right.
Impossible.
Right.
Perfect for her. Maybe this time. Yeah. Everybody loves a winner.
Sure.
Like, that is so brilliantly. It's so brilliant for her. It's perfect.
So
I just want to say, Vera Farmiga, maybe she did it up just right, and she's a GD rock star. That's all I'm saying.
We get it.
Love me some Vera Farmiga.
You know, shout out to Norma, who did a great job of that song, and shout out to Vera Farmiga, who did a great job playing Norma, singing that song.
That was complex.
It was. But I was happy for everyone involved, for Vera and for Norma. Very impressed. So anyway, that happens. Wonderful song. But I will say, as an aside, as a guy who's dealt with a bunch of, pretentious preening actors in my day, what a nightmare that would be if casting Norma Bates as your lead actress on anything. You think that's a diva? You think there's going to be some issues on the set?
I got news for you, brother. Most of them aren't right.
That's not going to be good.
They don't say that actresses are crazy because they're not crazy.
Yes, okay. Or maybe she'll fit right in.
She'll fit right in.
All right.
She will find her people.
Now, does she get the part?
She's got to get the part.
We don't know if she's got the
part. She annihilated that.
All right. And what about Norman? Does Norman get in there?
Did Norman even audition? I don't know.
No, he didn't. Well, we didn't see him audition, but he's there to audition.
He may have auditioned. So. Maybe he's saying Sandman.
So that happens. We did skip over the fact that Norma making the bed, very sparsely decorated Norman Bates' room. You know, most teenagers got, you know, they might have a picture of, I don't know, who on the wall.
There should be a Lamborghini. You know. There should be,
half naked starlet.
What's her name? She had the little
Cindy
mole, right?
Crawford?
Cindy Crawford in the American flag.
Yes.
That's what I had going on.
Yes, in the 90s. But Norman,
it's when I was a teenager.
I know Norman. He'll have, like, I don't know, whoever he's got up there.
Just saying, Cindy Crawford's timeless. You can do that. She got right. meaningful beauty going on. You can
Point
have Cindy
is,
Crawford.
My man has got one pillow and he's got his stuffed dog. Right, stuffed dog. He's got a pillow.
So
he's
grim.
Got a lamp, and he's got some pearls.
He's just letting that stuffed beaver downstairs cook. He's gonna bring that up later on.
That's gonna go right there,
right front and center.
Like that's a 16, 17 years old. That's a rough room. That's a sign that something's not right.
Spartan situation.
Ooh, the dog is like right there, and it's just. Anyway, so she finds the pearls, and she's very, very, very concerned. When they have the break outside, he does ask her about it, and this is what sort of turns the argument outside, was when she confronts him about the pearls, and he's like, I found them in my pocket. Like, and then it's like a weird moment where she's like, oh, no, and he's like, I know this sounds crazy. I don't know. What?
Maybe I picked him up when I was, you know.
Yeah.
What if it was something at school or something
right,
like that?
Right, because he's in that moment, he knows his mother's upset. He's trying to comfort
sure.
her. Like, she
he's
can't
scrambling.
Think.
And she will gladly take whatever he's prepared to offer
right.
to have it not be, to have her get out of jail. She don't have to think about it.
Yeah, well, exactly. But and that's not about him covering his own ass, like, I don't want to get caught. That's about him making his mother feel better.
Yes, definitely.
Like, no, Mom, maybe I didn't kill her. Maybe I found him, you know. So that was an interesting moment. So when we get back to the hotel after the audition, sweet little Emma comes out and says that, you know, they found the killer. They found the killer.
Nobody was happier than Norma.
Oh, my God.
You didn't kill her!
Yes.
Yay!
Yes. Norman was like, oh, okay. Yeah.
Well, I tell you what, if I was 16, 17, and I was there, you know, I'd have been just so panicked that Emma was going to blow my lie.
Right.
Because remember, the whole thing was the movie with Emma, mm-hmm. you know, so I was just waiting for Norma to be like, sorry, you guys missed the movie, and Emma to be like, what movie? What are you talking about, Norman?
Yes.
But that didn't happen, so that was easy.
So, you know, so Bradley gets in the train. She got on the train.
Bus.
I mean, I thought there was no chance she's getting on that bus, but, and I think that there's no chance that she's staying on that bus. But you know, she'll definitely be back because she's got to, you know, fulfill my prediction of her being Norman's kill in the shower.
Yeah, absolutely.
Anyway, so that's so that was the episode.
No. It is not the episode.
What happened?
We meet someone at the very end of the episode.
Oh, I thought that was in the previews. You're right.
No,
that was
that's the very end of the episode.
Oh, yeah, of course.
We get to meet the illustrious, much talked about and much maligned brother of Norma Bates.
Yes, yes, yes.
Driving a Dodge Avenger.
Driving a Dodge Avenger. Now
that is the Dodge Avenger of rental cars.
We've made some predictions about the nature of the brother.
Now, yeah,
talk about some incestuous stuff about the nature of the Norman and the brother's relationship and who the father of Dylan may or may not be.
There's an awful lot of similarity in their haircut, man. That's all I'm saying.
I don't know. I mean, we may be in some interesting territory here because I think that. I don't know.
That's gonna be some deep stuff, pretty darn quick.
Yeah, played by my man, and I can't. But Lem from the Shield is the uncle,
the brother.
So I don't know, man. This is The previews gave us some hints that there may be something going on, especially when Dylan says in the preview something effective like, "What aren't you telling me about your brother and your relationship,
dude? You don't want to know."
Yeah. I mean, really, so do you think that that's the deal?
I don't know, man. He's sure got the same hair. All right, well, let's do predictions. You ready to do this?
It's his uncle.
I know.
Uncle Lem.
Uncle Lem. He could just have the same hair from the uncle.
All right.
All right. I'm going to go first because I think that we're going to find out that the uncle is the father. I think that's what's going to come out of this whole thing. I think he'll deny it quite a bit. I think it'll be a big fight, but I think that'll end up being the deal. And I think that this whole Bradley suicide note thing, it may calm things down. I do not think Romero's going to buy it because there will not be a body. Mm-hmm. Bodies tend to make things more convincing mm-hmm. as far as suicides go.
Right.
I think drinking McPillerton will take it. I think Mommy will be okay with it, but I don't think that Romero will accept it. That's all I got right now.
All right. I also predict that, Uncle Bates is the father, and we'll see how that shakes out. I think that he's only going to be around for a couple of episodes. I also think that Dylan will end up. I feel like that Norma will end up killing him. And
Think Norma's going to kill the brother?
Yeah, because, you know, I think that there's an abusive situation there, or there's a weird situation or something there that Norma's going to be like, "What are you doing here? You can't be here." And then she's going to kill him, and then Dylan's going to freak out because that's his dad and blah, 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 blah. That's where I'm at.
Mic drop.
That's what I think.
Good night, Wisconsin.
Kenny Johnson. Gosh.
Sorry, Nick. Got it.
Kenny Johnson is the father.
Uncle.
Joe, where can we find you?
You can find me on the Twitters at Joe Flippo, JoeFlippo, and my website is josephsanflippo.com.
I'm Joe Braswell. You can find me on Twitter and Instagram at Joe K. Braswell. Dua Casey and maybe Nando Velasquez will be back next week. We'll have some more light shed into this wonderful world, more Vera Farmiga, more Freddie Highmore. And you love Vera Farmiga, right?
I do.
All right.
Thank you guys very much for listening
to us and downloading us on iTunes. We really appreciate that for rating us. You keep us in the top 5 and the top 10. You keep us up there, and we love your loyal fans who followed us from this season to last season to this season. We appreciate you very much. That's all I got. That's it for the two Joes. We'll see you next week.
From executive producers Maria Menounos, Kevin Undergaro, Phil Svitek, and the entire AfterBuzz TV staff, we would like to thank you for listening to the AfterBuzz TV network. To watch or listen to other after shows and post comments or questions, be sure to visit AfterBuzzTV.com. I'm Sir Richard Wentworth, and this has been a presentation of AfterBuzz TV.
Buzz you later.
The views expressed herein are those of the hosts only and do not necessarily reflect the views of AfterBuzz TV or its owners or principals.